News Talk 1110 99.3 WPT, where Charlotte turns for severe weather information.
Hello, Carolinas. You are listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 Sports Radio WFNZ. Carolina Focus is also available as a podcast on WBT.com. We're your co-hosts, Sharon Forsland. I'm Ed Billick. Let's get started. What's the big news story of the week? The COVID vaccine. Here in the Carolinas, many, many questions. Let's start with the press conference the other day and understand more about this historical medical event right here on Carolina Focus.
Perfect. Hi, everyone. I hope you all can hear me okay. I know the mask on and we are here where the vaccine is getting distributed today. So a lot of exciting energy in the background. Dr. Gary Little is going to be speaking with all of you today. Dr. Little has been heavily involved with the vaccine distribution process and really the entire COVID-19 pandemic, facilitating the response with the medical teams at Carolina's Medical Center. So he is going to give us a brief update about the vaccine, how it arrived today, Atrium Health plans on the first teammates of ours who will be getting the vaccine, and really sharing some insight in the behind the scenes of what it took the vaccine here today and what we can expect in the weeks ahead, knowing that this is going to be a long process and we're all learning as we go. So I just want to mention we are on a tight deadline today. Dr. Little does have to run off right at 3. So if you can each have one question and hopefully we'll get everything answered, and we'll be sure to provide more information later today, tomorrow, in the week ahead. So with that, Dr. Little, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you to share the opening remarks.
All right, great. Yeah, and I'll keep my remarks short. I know you all have questions. So yeah, what I want to say is just this is, you know, an exciting day for us at Atrium Health and in North Carolina and in our country. This is what we have been waiting for. I've heard people say this day is analogous to D-Day. I'd rather use something a little different as an analogy of just Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl for us. And just like teams that are playing in the Super Bowl, we've been preparing for this since the beginning of this pandemic. And, you know, we really started ramping up our planning and practicing and drilling going back to the end of September. And so we've been anticipating this day for the last, almost 3 months. And so we're excited today. We received our first shipment today, and we actually have vaccinated a few people today, just trying to get the process going. And everybody's doing great, and they're feeling great, and they're super excited to be able to be the first ones vaccinated in North Carolina. So again, I think it's just for us, this is just the optimism that I think our country needs and our community needs right now, given the way things are going in our country right now in terms of numbers of cases. But this is really what's gonna get us on the other side of this pandemic. So we're super excited. So I'll stop there and entertain questions.
Thanks, Dr. Little. Tina, we'll start with you. I know you said you have two, but if we can keep it to one, because we've got a lot of people to get to today, that would be great. Thank you.
No problem, Claire. Good afternoon, Mr. Little. My first question for you, we learned facing and non-medical employees at local hospitals to receive a vaccine under priority group 1A. Will the hospital, Atrium Health, allow any of these approved non-patient facing, non-medical employees to receive the vaccine during the 1A period? Will that take place at all during the 1A period, and will that happen today at all? Those are my questions.
Yeah, so right now, I think what you're referring to are some of the frontline community workers and things such as that. Is that what you're referring to? Like first responders?
No, sir. I'm referring to employees that would be within the Atrium Health umbrella. So they're your employees, but they would be considered non-patient facing.
Oh, I get what you're saying.
Non-medical employees. So they would be in administrative offices, maybe. Yeah, some of them have been approved by the state.
Yeah. So what we've done in our group of employees and our physicians and other what you would call more patient facing or direct providers, we put them into a list of hierarchy and based primarily on whether they're likely to encounter patients with COVID or they're taking care of high risk populations who are at more at risk, who, you know, suffer from either higher mortality risk or higher morbidity from COVID-19. And so within that though, we have grouped physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, others, environmental services workers, anybody who is in those sort of two situations, we will immunize them the same. So we didn't give preference of physicians and nurses, you know, over the EVS worker who has to clean the rooms of patients that have COVID-19.
What about people in administrative offices who are not?
Yeah, so folks in administrative offices are lower priority because in our organization, most of them are working remotely. So they are a lower priority and they would not be receiving it initially.
So they will not be vaccinated during the 1A period is what you're saying?
Well, no, not in the 1A period. The 1A period primarily is based on the federal and state guidance are really anybody in healthcare. But we've subdivided that to our team who is more at risk of actually caring for patients with COVID-19. So administrators who are working remotely would not be a part of that initial group to receive the immunization.
Thank you, Tina. Alex, I think you're up next, please.
Hi, Dr. Little. I have a multi-part question. It's one question, but these are related to one question, multi-part. So just kind of trying to get a sense of how many people have signed up to try to get the vaccine, how many you vaccinated so far, and what the goal is for the week or any particular time period thus far.
Yeah, so we haven't really signed up people at this point. We're really getting our process up and rolling. We got the vaccine this morning. So our goal is just to quickly ramp up and vaccinate as many people as we can, as quickly as we can, as we kind of roll this through. We do have a limited amount of vaccine. We did not receive sort of the full shipment that we were allocated, but a small portion of that. And so our goal is to get that out to our people as quickly as we can.
So how many have you vaccinated so far?
Just today, we just vaccinated 5 people.
5 people, okay. Yeah. And they all doing okay?
Yes, they're all doing fine. 2 hours or so after their vaccinations, and they're doing fine.
Okay.
Thank you, Alex. Carolyn Hudson, we have you up next.
Yes, thank you. I was just wondering, Dr. Little, a little bit about the dose capacity at Atrium now. I'm guessing you guys aren't releasing an initial number of doses that you have now, but just in general, what is your storage capable of holding?
Yeah, so we, like many health systems, purchased special freezers to be able to store the vaccine safely. And we have upwards of enough capacity to store around 300,000 doses of the vaccine.
And just quick clarification, when you are talking about doses, are you talking about both of the two-part vaccine or just the first dose?
Yeah, so when I say doses, that's just, it's really just doses. So that could be, if we have 300,000 doses, that would be enough to vaccinate 150,000 people.
Okay, gotcha. And are you sharing a number that of vaccines that you've received so far?
I don't think we're sharing that number. Clarity, can you clarify that?
We can clarify. Let's got to move on to Carolyn Hicks, please.
Hi. How did things go today with the delivery and what you've been doing so far? And what are kind of the next steps as you move forward?
Yeah, so great question. You know, the delivery went without a hitch. It actually arrived here a bit early. We were notified it'd be in our storage location around 10:30 this morning. I actually arrived around 9:30. Things went off without a hitch. They are now in our freezers. And yeah, so right now what we're doing is, you know, we did sort of dry run drills prior to this, just to kind of walk through the process. But right now we're actually, you know, we processed a few people this morning, again, just to kind of get used to the, you know, the thawing of the vaccine, you know, really trying to understand how the state vaccination system works. So we had to, you know, you have to put the information of each person in that system. So we're working through those logistics right now, but later this afternoon, our plan is to vaccinate some more people. And then, as I said earlier, just to continue to vaccinate our team, ramp up that process as we go along.
Thank you. Hannah, you're up.
Hey there. Thank you. Yeah, I just had a quick question. You said that you received a small portion of that first allotment today. When are you expecting to get the rest of that first allotment? And then can you walk me through a little bit about in this first allotment, are you holding half of that back in order to give people their second injection? Or is the state planning on sending you that at a future date?
Yeah, so we got a small portion in terms of, I think this was the first shipment that only a few sites in the state got. So it's sort of an initial portion of your first shipment. I don't think we have the information of when the rest of that shipment would arrive. I would anticipate it would arrive sometime towards the latter half of this week, but that's something that I don't have confirmed on. In terms of whether we're holding back, no, we've been instructed by the state to use all of our vaccine supply, and that they are going to send us the second dose for those people who are vaccinated at a later date. So they're accounting for what we use to make sure that there's a second dose for those folks that get it. And that's why that vaccination information system is so important. That's why we have to make sure that people are in that system. And then once we give them the vaccine, we put that into the system. So now they know that, you know, someone on our team got it, they'll need a second dose in 21 days.
Perfect, thank you. Georgerie, I hope I'm saying your name right. I don't think we've had the pleasure of meeting yet, but you're up. One more call for Georgerie Godfrey.
Hey, yes, the questions that I wanted to ask have already kind of been asked, so I'll just tune in, and if I need to, I'll jump in a little later.
Perfect, thank you, we appreciate it. Chandler Morgan from BTV.
Hi, my question is about Dr. Katie Passeretti, how she's doing today, and then really the thought process about why she was selected. I'm sure there's obviously a rhyme or reason, so why it was her, and then also who is next? So is that the MICU staff? What's the next playbook as for who is going to get it within Atrium?
Yeah, so thanks for asking about Dr. Passeretti. From my understanding, she's doing great. And doing great and fine. In terms of who we are prioritizing, as I said earlier, we really are prioritizing our frontline team that are caring for patients who have COVID-19 or are likely to have COVID-19. So Dr. Passeretti, as an infectious disease doctor, is one of those physicians who's on the front lines taking care of those patients. And we just felt that, you know, her position as an infectious disease doctor, as our chief epidemiologist, as someone who people look to and admire and trust, that we thought she would be someone who would be great to receive the vaccine. The rest of our group that, you know, we will be rolling out to, you know, it's the people who you would think that should be first in line. It's our team, you know, providers, nurses who work in our nursing homes. It's the people who work in our emergency departments. It's the people who work in our designated COVID-19 units. And as I said before, it's a cross section of all of our teammates. It's nurses, it's doctors, it's respiratory therapists, it's pharmacists, it's EVS, our environmental services workers. It's anybody who would come into contact with those patients.
And also a follow-up. So now that you are obviously administering the vaccine, are you requiring the staffers who administer it to get the vaccine before they administer it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, so we are, that is a priority group, the quote vaccinators. That's something that in the state and federal guidance that they do recommend that the people who are part of your vaccination program get vaccinated early on as well. And so they're included in that first group as well.
Thank you. Claire Donnelly, you are up, please.
Yeah, hi, thanks. It's Claire Donnelly from WFAE. I'm wondering if you could tell me who, besides Dr. Passeretti, were vaccinated today of those five people, who those people were?
Yeah, I think we don't know if we're going to be able to give that information, but Claire, can you clarify that?
Sure, I can chime in. So we have a list of 10 teammates total today who are getting the vaccine here within a couple of hours, and we're gathering all the details, their names, where they work, what they do, what this means to them, pictures, etc. So we're definitely going to share that with all of you and make sure that you have the opportunities to speak with some of them this week as much as possible. So it's coming. We're working on it.
Okay, thanks, Claire. And then Dr. Little, since that one didn't get an answer, could you just tell me a little bit about what the process is for these people who are getting vaccinated, how that's working out?
Yeah, well, I mean, the easiest part is actually putting the injection in their arm. I would say, you know, in terms of what they need to do, one, they need to be registered in the state vaccine information system. So that's one step they need to do. And then we have an internal program where we will send out an invitation for them to go in and schedule themselves to receive their vaccine. And then it's just show up and get vaccinated. So those are really the two steps. We determine based on our priority of that 1A group who we invite first. So that's the way we kind of make sure that we're getting it to the highest priority group first.
Thank you.
All right, let's see, Sylvia.
Hello. My name is Sylvia Oven from Telemundo Charlotte. Our viewers are Hispanics, so they're aware about the vaccine and they're excited at the same time. So how many people in total, you say 10 today, that got the vaccine in the Atrium Health?
Yeah, Claire, can you clarify that? Because I think we're going to be upwards of probably 10 to 15 today or something like that.
It's seeming like it'll be 15, give or take. We'll definitely let you all know around 6 or 7 o'clock tonight. We did 5 this morning. We're inviting either 10 or 15 more in a few hours, just working on some paperwork and scheduling and things like that. So it's a little bit up in the air right now, but it's going to be somewhere in the 15 range.
Okay, today. And do they are obligated to get the vaccine, or they have the choice if they want or no?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are not requiring our internal team to get the vaccine. This, you know, because it's, you know, it's one, it's a very recent authorization from the FDA and recommended by the CDC. And so there's a lot that you know, we know about the vaccine. We know how effective it is. But until we learn more, you know, the longer term effects and things like that, we are not requiring it. We are strongly recommending it, though, to our team.
Perfect. And the last question, any symptoms or effects that you are aware that it's going to happen after the vaccine, for example, like the flu shot, that they get fever and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, similar to, you know, a lot of vaccines, including the flu vaccine. People can experience, you know, mild headache, muscle aches. Some might get also a low-grade fever. Typically, those will happen within a day or two of receiving the vaccine, and those symptoms usually resolve within 48, no longer than 72 hours after the vaccine.
Thank you so much. Claire, if you know about someone that is Hispanic that can talk to us that are getting the vaccine, that would be great. Thank you.
We're on it. Absolutely. Brett, I'm so sorry. I inadvertently skipped over you. My apologies.
You're totally fine. Thanks. I appreciate it. Dr. Little, I know when we spoke last summer, it was the same night that you spoke to the school board, and I remember you saying something that, you know, it might be until the summer, until the vaccine was readily made available to everyone. And, you know, I think Dr. Cohen said last week that it may be, you know, late spring. I know these things are fluid and changing. What's your best guess as to when this will be made readily available to everyone that's not in healthcare?
Yeah, using that crystal ball again. I mean, look. I would say the vaccine arrived, in December. That's a little bit earlier than we were anticipating. We were anticipating maybe end of December to early January. So that's great. Yeah, a lot of it is going to depend on how much vaccine we get and how quickly we can vaccinate, you know, all of our team who want the vaccine. What we've been told is that we cannot move on to group 1B or group 2 or 3 until we are finished with group 1A. So, you know, my best guess, moving on to group 1B and completely a guess, probably sometime around February would be when we would move to group 1B. General population, that's probably too murky for me to put a estimate out there.
And just to clarify, in terms of the vaccines that you guys are getting, I know the first shipment was with Pfizer. Will you guys also be doing Moderna as well, or just Pfizer?
Yeah, we're not sure what the plans are from that perspective. We're prepared to do whatever whatever vaccine we get. We've got already built into our systems that, you know, if you get the Moderna vaccine, we will make your second dose appointment 28 days out, and you can only get the Moderna vaccine. If you get the Pfizer, it's 21 days, and it will make sure you only get the same vaccine twice. So we're ready for either, but we're not sure yet if we're going to get two types of vaccines or more. But we're ready for whatever the possibilities are.
Excellent. Well, we've got about 4 minutes to spare, so I'll offer it up to one more question before we close things out for this portion of our media coverage today.
I have a question, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just put it in the chat, but bear with me if my math is incorrect, please feel free to correct me. But you said that there's 300,000 doses, meaning it would be 150,000 people since it's a two-part dose. Does that number cover all of the staff within the hospital, meaning would this first shipment that you have be enough to vaccinate everyone that is needed to within the hospital system at Atrium?
I didn't say we had 300,000 doses. I said we have the capacity to store 300,000 doses.
Got it.
That's the capacity we have. So hopefully that clears up that question.
So our top story here in Charlotte and in many communities across the country, the arrival of the COVID-19 vaccine yesterday. Dr. Gary Little, one of the lead facilitators at Atrium Health, talking about its arrival.
This is, you know, an exciting day for us at Atrium Health and in North Carolina and in our country. This is what we have been waiting for. I've heard people say this day is analogous to D-Day. I'd rather use something a little different as an analogy of just Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl for us. And just like teams that are playing in the Super Bowl, we've been preparing for this since the beginning of this pandemic. And, you know, we really started ramping up our planning and practicing and drilling going back to the end of September. And so we've been anticipating this day for the last, almost 3 months. And so we're excited today. We received our first shipment today. And we actually have vaccinated a few people today, just trying to get the process going. And everybody's doing great, and they're feeling great, and they're super excited to be able to be the first ones vaccinated in North Carolina. So again, I think it's just for us, this is just the optimism that I think our country needs and our community needs right now, given the way things are going in our country right now in terms of numbers of cases. But this is really what's going to get us on the other side of this pandemic. So we're super excited.
Dr. Gary Little, now he was right there as the vaccines were arriving at Atrium here in Charlotte. And then later in the day, the first person to be vaccinated in Charlotte, the medical director of infection prevention at Atrium, that is a name you're probably familiar with now, Dr. Katie Pazzaretti. She held a news conference last night that both Brett Jensen and myself were part of. Brett's initial question.
Thank you. Dr. Pazzaretti, I'm not going to ask the proverbial question if you were nervous getting the shot, but I will ask you, were you really anxious to actually get it done? Because you've been waiting for this for a while and you're just really anxious to finally have it happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this day we've been waiting for quite a while. It's, you know, a huge transition point, I think, into the future and holds a ton of hope and promise for our patients and our teammates and our community. So, yes, anxious to do it and get it started, and more importantly, get vaccines in the arms of people more susceptible than me, and, you know, just start getting it out there and start getting that protection. And to answer your first question, I wasn't nervous in the slightest. My biggest concern, though, is truly vaccine hesitancy, like people being afraid of taking the vaccine, people not being educated on the vaccine, because, you know, we know that vaccines are only effective if a large chunk of the population takes them to get that kind of herd immunity, that community protection. So in my mind, that's honestly the biggest uphill battle that we have to face. And, you know, so important to get the word out and to really start having those conversations with our patients and our community.
Now, she has been working in and around COVID-19 and pandemic conditions for so long. What must it have been like riding to work yesterday knowing how momentous a day it was going to be?
Driving over to get the vaccine and, you know, getting the vaccine itself, like, very emotional. It's something we've been preparing for, been thinking about for a while, but now that it's actually here and, you know, after so many months of healthcare workers being pushed to the edge, like, everyone stressed out, how hard it is at work, how hard it is at home, you know, the potential for something that can truly impact the course we're on right now. It's just hugely emotional for me personally. And, you know, I think to many people, seeing that this vaccine is now actually here and it's as effective as it is, like, that's, you know, really honestly feels miraculous in a way that we're at this point in such a short period of time. You know, Pfizer is the vaccine that's available right now, and that is to be dosed in 21 days. So in 3 weeks, I'll go back and get my second vaccine. It is very important to kind of reinforce with people, you know, that first shot is the first step, but then you really need to complete that second step, that second shot in 3 weeks to get the full protection of the vaccine. And it's important to schedule that kind of, if possible, schedule it when you're getting your first shot. So it's already set up and you're already kind of in the mindset that, you know, you're going to complete that to get that protection.
And on the heels of that information, I then asked this.
Doctor, thank you very much. I appreciate your time tonight. We've heard so much talk, and everybody, I think, knows the process of getting the COVID test now. So now we have the vaccine implementation, and you talked about the initial point today and then the second round of that. But what about the end point? I think a lot of people will want to know, once I get it, at what point will I officially know I'm in the clear, if that makes sense?
Yeah, and, you know, that's a hard question to answer right now. I think, you know, a couple of things that you can look at. You know, certainly completing the vaccine series is first step in protection. You know, to turn the pandemic around to achieve that herd immunity, the numbers that are thrown around is about 60 to 70% of the population need to have protection either from the vaccine or from natural infection. The question that's going to come down the road is how long does that vaccine protection last and whether we need additional boosters along the way. And those are questions that we need more time to answer. But I think, you know, the fact that the vaccine is 95% effective in studies, both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine had excellent efficacy, that, you know, good comfort level, that across a variety of different types of people, protection is achieved with the vaccine.
There she is, the first in Charlotte to get the vaccination yesterday, Dr. Katie Pazzaretti. She's the Medical Director of Infection Prevention at Atrium.
More to come right here on Carolina Focus, right after the break.
The Brett Winterbull Show.
Just because you advance in the realm of politics doesn't mean you're wiser or smarter than the average charlatan. It just means you're more well-connected, you've raised the right amount of money, and you've glad-handed the right people.
Stay connected. Brett Winterbull, Monday afternoon, 3 to 6. WBT.
Your emergency situation station.
Well, welcome back to Carolina Focus on this Sunday before Christmas. You're listening to News Talk 1110-993 WBT, 1079 The Link, and 1025-610 Sports Radio WFNZ. Carolina Focus is also available as a podcast on WBT.com. Along with Sharon Thorsland, I'm your co-host, Ed Billick. And this week, big news in the city of Charlotte. Tom Glick, who's the president of Tepper Sports and Entertainment, introduced Nick Kelly, the newly named president of the Charlotte Football Club. And that's our new MLS soccer team. Here's the press conference. Hope you enjoy it. And then we got a few surprises here at the end of the show, right here on Carolina Focus.
It's my pleasure to introduce you to Nick in a few minutes, but before I do so, I wanted to just share a few thoughts about Nick Kelly for you. First, as you've seen from his resume, he's coming from Anheuser-Busch. He has had a massive job there working with some of the biggest beer brands in the world and linking them and activating them with some of the biggest sports brands, leagues and teams, also major events, live entertainment, live music. So he's coming from a huge job. And he's the second thing I wanted to share is he's coming into a huge job. As president of Charlotte Football Club, Nick is going to oversee our entire business operation. Anything off the field with Charlotte Football Club is Nick's domain. And he'll be pairing up with Zoran Kurneta, who we hired just under a year ago, our general manager or sporting director, who is looking after soccer operations. And these two guys will be working very closely with each other. The third thing I want to share is that Nick understands soccer and he's passionate about soccer. And this was an important criteria for us. He can probably share stories about his background of playing, but what was also important to us is how well he understands fans. This is incredibly important for us because the club at the end of the day is about soccer fans. It's about memories. It's about experiences. And Nick's experience working with the FIFA World Cup, with the Olympics, with the ICC tournament, which of course we host here annually in Bank of America Stadium, with other Major League Soccer teams, with the National Women's Soccer League, all of it was a very important part of our evaluation of how he could excel and lead our club in the right way. The fourth thing I wanted to share is Nick. Nick knows our city and he knows our region. He's lived here. If you go back a decade, he lived here in Charlotte. He understands everything that's great about North and South Carolina, a wonderful region and territory, and about the city of Charlotte. And so we don't have to teach him that. He knows everything about it, and he knows what an exciting future we have. And we want our new soccer club to be right in the heart of that. And so we know that Nick is well prepared for that. And then the fifth thing I wanted to share is that he's arriving at just the perfect time. We're 1 year out from our announcement of our expansion on December 17th of last year. But as we look forward, we're 15 months away from kicking off. It's the ideal amount of time for us to shift gears and to really chase down every possible target to make this an amazing football club for our city and our region. And we're very fortunate to be in a league like Major League Soccer, which has a rich history, is growing incredibly well. And we aim for this soccer club to be contributing and adding value to that and also setting new standards. So to have a 15-month runway for Nick to lead us as we prepare for that very first game. It's just ideal. So we're excited that we've gotten here. And then before I turn the floor over to Nick, I would just like to share an aside, which is when the news leaked yesterday, and then when we announced this morning, I've heard from dozens of colleagues in the business. Nick is someone who's well known in the business. He's come through an exhaustive search process. We're delighted that he's joining us, but he's someone that our colleagues throughout the industry know very well. And so these dozens of people I've heard from have shared excitement for us at Tepper Sports and Entertainment and Charlotte Football Club that Nick is joining us. I think excitement for Nick. And what I would say is that I told them I agreed with them. And of course, I can't be objective, but we're excited for our city and our region, for our fans, for our business partners, for our communities across the Carolinas, that we have someone like Nick who's going to drive us forward and drive us all the way through to March 1st of 2022 and then into our first season. So with that, I'd like to pass the floor to Nick Kelly. Nick, welcome.
Hey, Tom, I greatly appreciate the kind introduction. And similar to you, I can't thank one, first of all, Tom and Mr. Tepper for the opportunity. I mean, I think that the work that's been done and the years since being awarded the franchise is already, leaps and bounds towards the right direction and the end goal of creating a best-in-class franchise when we take the field in 22. Like Tom said, I'm extremely excited to come back to Charlotte. I've got family based in Charlotte, Greenville, South Carolina, a vacation for nearly all my life in the Outer Banks. Carolina's home to me and my family. But I think the biggest piece that I'm most excited about is working with the community of Charlotte to build a team that we all can share. I think that this is a very rare opportunity as a sports fan that you can have an opportunity and play a role in building a culture and building traditions that you played a role in, from have it being the march to the stadium to the chance that we have in the game. Our number one objective is to make sure that everybody in the Charlotte community feels like this is their team. And, I think that once we can do that, we can start expanding to all of the Carolinas to make sure that this is truly the soccer team that this such a rich tradition of soccer has in the Carolinas that represents them well. To Tom's earlier point is, my job is to come in here and support everything that Zoran's doing on the field, but most importantly is focusing on the business at hand to make sure that we have a packed stadium, to make sure that the business community understands that the right place to come actually partner to help drive their businesses with Charlotte FC and ultimately is make a franchise that the Charlotte community is proud of. I think that every day, the one thing we've shown is that if your team or your franchise is a good representation of the community, they'll fall in love and support you. So that's our number one objective from day one. And it's a little disappointing that in today's current pandemic society, we can't physically be there to celebrate and engage with the community. But we're going to find unique ways, the same way everybody else had, to engage with the supporters group, to engage with everybody in the community over the course of the next couple months. But know that we have 15 months to ramp up. Our goal is to be crescendoing when we kick off in March of 22, but there's a lot of work to do between now and then. So again, thanks to Tom and Mr. Tepper and honestly everybody at Tepper Sports who's done an amazing job up to this point.
Thank you, Nick.
Here. Yeah, Brad. I mean, the good part for me in my current role is that I have the opportunity to engage and create marketing campaigns across more than 80 individual team properties. So the experience I have to try and reach and engage fans in everywhere from LA to New York to Chicago to Nashville is all completely different experiences and strategies. So I think that experience of managing the types of brands that have a such diverse set of consumer targets will help me translate to what we're trying to do here, which is we want to hit different neighborhoods, demographics, and different parts of the state. And it just takes a unique set of marketing strategy and business-to-business skills. So fortunately, I've had that experience in my current role, and hopefully it translates well here.
Okay, let's go to Ashley Mahoney from the Charlotte Post.
state. I think the one thing whenever I had the opportunity to speak with Tom was just that, you know, I'll never forget an experience when I was still here, whenever I came and saw Liverpool. I think it was AC Milan or Inter Milan back in 14. And just, I mean, there's almost a full sold out stadium for an international match that there hadn't been one there in a while. And for everybody to show up for something like that, that had, you know, it was one of the first years of the ICC in general. And I think that kind of proved to me from a big market, big picture standpoint, that there was no community tie to either one of those teams. They just love soccer. So like, that's my probably my first impression from a live event here. And then, you know, I think that the other thing is too, is I grew up in, you know, the Virginia Beach area where, you know, your dream was to go play at Carolina or Wake Forest or Duke. So just even like from the grassroots level all the way up, like this is where the soccer community kind of lived on the East Coast. So yeah, I'm not saying that this is necessarily the first time soccer's here. It's just, I think this is the first time we collectively can build a program together that we all share, and there is no interstate rivalry.
The next 15 months.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, honestly, the first thing we're doing is that we know in January we're going to try and convert a lot of those deposits for season tickets and some of the seats immediately, instead to having people who feel like they're part of the team even more so, because it's real. You know where you're going to be sitting. You can start to get excited. So day one, it's going to be converting a lot of those people who've already made that commitment to be a part of the team to step up. I think that the second piece is too, is really helping the business community understand what role is Charlotte football going to play actually in the community. Because, you know, we're not the Panthers, we're not the Hornets, we're not the Knights. Like, what we're going to be is different. And I think that's our goal, is to kind of tell our story across the business community. And last is that while it's hard now, my number one job is to be visible. I mean, I want to be at the Academy games. I need Charlotte. I want to be, you know, at the opportunities to meet with all the communities that are doing their own, like, you know, activations as it relates to soccer. Because to Ashley's point, this isn't the first time that there's been soccer activations in Charlotte. So I want to be ingrained in the soccer community across the state, and more specifically in Charlotte. And that's a big job, because there's a lot going on here. So I'm not naive to the fact that we're the only game in town.
All right, let's go to Charlotte. Plus and beyond, I know you mentioned you like to do things differently to other franchises in the city, but perhaps in terms of MLS.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as a whole, there's a lot of great traditions across the sport. And you see what's going on in Atlanta or Portland or Seattle, and they're all uniquely them. And I think what excites me the most about doing something differently is creating our own traditions that the community is a part of in building, and the culture of what the atmosphere feels like on game day. There is no guardrails or cookie cutter way to do it. I mean, I think that's the best part of this, is that there is no, we've always done it this way. Everything we do will be a first. So I think that's what's probably the most exciting piece of this, is that we will be unique, and we will be doing it differently, because we're going to do it for a way that makes the most sense for Charlotte and the fans here. And, you know, while we may learn and take some best practices from other places, is that what you see, you know, on game day in 2022 for the FC is just going to be, you know, uniquely ours.
Along with our Carolina Panthers and the Charlotte Hornets, and of course our AAA team, the Charlotte Knights, now we're going to have a Major League Soccer team, and it's really exciting as this town continues to grow. Hey, what happened this past Tuesday? WBT, along with the Carolina Panthers, and with their help from the good folks at Frito-Lay, conducted a bike drive in honor of John Hancock, as he's done many, many years with Kids First. It was down at Bank of America Stadium. The final bike count that you good people here in the Charlotte area contributed was 418 bicycles. Let's listen to the last few minutes as Mark Garrison and Brent Winterbull wrap up the bike drive right down there at Bank of America Stadium. And again, thanks to all of you that dropped by and contributed.
All right, 8 minutes before 7, ho, 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 we've had our big WBT bike drive today, formerly known as the Hancock Bikes for Kids. John Hancock has retired, but carrying on the big tradition, and our buddy Brett Winterbull in the strangest coat I've ever seen joins us live now from... Are you still...
Mark Garrison.
I'm good, man. So describe this jacket now for the listeners.
The jacket is electric green with red finishes. We've got abominable snowmen, angry elves, and I think we got some cats on here as well. In addition to my musical cat tie that plays jingle bells and cat voices. So I am well equipped. I wanted to stand out in the crowd and be able to tell people, look for the guy with the green jacket. And I was not mistaken for a Masters winner.
It is actually, Brett walked in the newsroom today and it was like, whoa, what are you wearing? But your tie is my favorite. You press a button and it sounds like a cat that's been hit by a car trying to do jingle bells or something.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I played it on the air and I had complaints from cat lovers across the area. So I will not do that again.
All right. So we've got
a wonderful time here.
All right. Yeah. 7 minutes left before. How many are we up to now? Do you have a current count or do you know?
Oh, my gosh. I'd have to double check. It's hundreds and hundreds. And it's a couple of tractor trailers left here. So, I mean, it is hundreds of.
That is awesome.
Hundreds and hundreds of bikes. So I don't have the exact number because I've been kind of interfacing with the folks who've been dropping them off. And we have had an unbelievable spread of people checking in with us, Mark. We're talking about, I just had a wonderful conversation with a man named Steve, who's been a 50-year WBT listener.
Wow.
He's been to every event that John Hancock did with the bike,
really?
with this fundraising effort and gift-raising effort. We have we've had all sorts of folks. We've had people who came by 3 and 4 times to drop bikes off.
Wow.
They went and they got more bikes, and they've brought them. Absolutely testimony to who we are on WBT, John Hancock's great legacy. And I'm so thrilled to be a part of this. It's the most exciting thing that I've been a part of in a very, very long time.
That is awesome. Yet, you know, it's interesting. In the years past, when we would have this big party down at East Mech and people would bring bikes, we would have people show up with bikes and they would just feel so inspired. They'd go buy more and come back again.
It's really incredible. It is an absolutely incredible thing to see. And look, the Panthers, WSOCTV, the great partners Frito-Lay and all the great organizations who are working with us here have just been absolute troopers. The smile on the faces of people as they dropped off the bikes, and you know what was really touching as parents, seeing the kids, young kids, helping hand out the bike helmets or the small bikes, helping their parents unload them. Really a multi-generational experience. It's everything that you want this season to be. And so proud to be a part of this here over at B of A.
Now, if somebody is listening and go, oh, let's go get a bike really quick, are we going to shut this down right at 7, or is there a little lag time?
I'm guessing there'll be a slight lag, but you really need to be inbound at this point in terms of coming in for the delivery. But, you know, if somebody decides that they want to somehow get one, I believe that we'd be able to probably arrange the delivery, because, you know, we want to make sure every one of these kids in need in a pretty tough year, a really tough year, is going to be able to have the kind of Christmas that we want them to have.
We've got two groups that will be distributing these bikes fairly soon, correct?
We do. Thompson Family the Services. And there's another. I don't have my sheet in front of me, but there's a second group as well. My brain has sort of turned to mush by this point in the night.
It's the jacket.
It's what it is. It's the jacket, Mark. I mean, I will mention it repeatedly tomorrow. I promise you that. The jacket comes out one time a year, and this is the one time it's coming out.
Now, I think you're actually going to be on WSOC in the 7 o'clock hour, and people can tune in and look at that jacket, right?
They can. I'm not taking any bids on it. It's dear and near to me. But, nevertheless, it's quite something. You know, and Mark, I mean, this has been an amazing time and an amazing place.
Really.
To watch this. And such community support from right at 10 o'clock this morning, right till now. We still have people dropping them off. It's incredible. It really is. It's a tribute to WBT.
As soon as everything opened at 10 o'clock this morning, Boomer was one of our first guys down there, and he said there were people pulling up from South Carolina who were dropping bikes off. So we're very grateful for that.
No, that's not happening.
Some winterable groupies is what they're. Yeah.
Well, you know, they're devoted. So. Let me just say again, we can't thank our partners enough in this endeavor.
Absolutely,
this has been a very tough year, but the turnout has been remarkable.
Yeah.
The charity the charity involved. You know, the giving from your heart. These are teams of bikes, and these are absolutely brand new. Everything from trikes all the way up to the training wheel, two-wheelers, all the way up to 10 speeds and 20 speeds.
Terrific. All right, my friend. Well, thank you so much. Good job down there.
Thank you, my friend. And Merry Christmas to everybody out there listening, and we'll pick it up again tomorrow, my friend.
And finally, here on Carolina Focus, as we get ready to celebrate Christmas, what are you doing this evening? Here's an idea for you. Jody Kearns and Carrie Massey from Holy Angels on Sunday's Share the Light event tonight in Belmont. Let's take a listen to it. What a great way to celebrate the Christmas season.
You know, I love Christmas and holiday lights as much as the next guy. And I think there are more out there this year because people are wanting that positivity and going and looking at the lights. There may be more people doing that. This is just my theory, but it's a socially distanced way with your family to be out and get a little festive. But I got to tell you, there are so many options around this area for Christmas lights and holiday lights. I'm a simplistic guy when it comes to lights. I mean, I like the big, lavish look of the of some of these sites, but I also like the simple luminary. You know, when I moved into the neighborhood I'm in right now, one of the things I love about it is we have neighborhood luminaries on Christmas Eve. Now, not everybody participates, but enough people do that it really is a beautiful thing to go look at. And on that note, luminaries, if you like luminaries, then I have an option for you coming up on Sunday night. I want to welcome two people to the WBT hotline. First of all, we have Carrie Massey, who's the executive VP and the COO of Holy Angels. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. We also have Jody Kynes, who is a longtime volunteer with Holy Angels and has come up with something that I think you're going to like. Jody, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being with us. And so the reason for this conversation today is an event called Share the Light with Holy Angels. And before I get into exactly what will be available to you to go view this weekend, Carrie, for our listeners who don't know, a little background on Holy Angels.
Sure. So actually, on Sunday night, December 20th, we'll be celebrating the beginning of our 65th year. Holy Angels has been around for 65 years, and it started with a little baby named Maria, who was the very first resident of Holy Angels, and she brought light to everyone who came to know her. So as a result of Maria, we now serve 80 adults and children who have intellectual developmental disabilities and complex medical needs at Holy Angels.
And so Holy Angels has an event on Sunday night from 6 to 8. Now, is this, Carrie, only this Sunday night, or is this something that goes on over several nights?
This is only one night. It is only Sunday night, so we hope everyone will join us.
Okay, so the event, Jody, you can tell us about this, because as I understand it, you came up with this idea, and you're a longtime volunteer. Talk about Share the Light.
Sunday evening, we invite the public to drive through our campus and get a glimpse of what those of us already close to Holy Angels see every day. And that is just the way that space radiates hope and love into our community.
And so this is, if you like luminaries, a lot of luminaries you can see at this, right?
Yes, indeed. So we've asked people to purchase luminaries in honor or in memory of people who have been a light to their life. There will also be an opportunity for people to purchase a large lit angel in memory or in honor of someone. And so when people campus, they will see over 2,000 luminaries and over 65 lit angels, as well as a unique opportunity to see a glimpse of our live nativity played out by some of our residents as you progressively drive through the event.
Now, if you're looking for lights on Sunday night, here's a pro tip. This tour, which takes about 15 or 20 minutes, is 5 minutes from McAdenville. So, Carrie, if you wanted to have a holiday light twofer on Sunday night and really have an awesome evening of seeing some lights and also doing, you know, helping a good cause in the process, this would not be a bad itinerary for this coming Sunday.
No, it wouldn't be. As a matter of fact, Holy Angels is right on the way to McAdenville, and you're going to have to ride right by it to get there. So why not stop in and let us share our story with everyone who's coming through Belmont?
So it's holyangelsnc.org/luminaries. That's correct if you want to find out more about what we just talked about and not only get information about seeing the lights, but also helping the calls in the process?
Absolutely, that's correct.
And anything else we should know about this?
Just that we're really excited to be able to share this opportunity. This is our first time doing this, and we hope it becomes an annual thing. And we're just really looking to make new friends and continue the great works of Holy Angels for 65 more years. And thanks for having us today.
All right. Off they go. HolyAngelsNC.org/luminaries. Again, it's 6 to 8 o'clock on the Holy Angels campus. That's 6600 Wilkinson Boulevard in Belmont on Sunday night.
From Sharon Thorslund and Ed Billick, wish you the very best of a Merry Christmas from all of us here at Carolina Focus.